we should, I'll just read a few parts of the outline of the article and give you an idea of what it's about, Phil, for this half hour, because it's going to get a lot of attention, as I say, hopefully, around the country.
Yeah, it's called, Why Was Martha Mitchell Kidnapped?
Yes. The article begins with this sentence, "My research on political assassinations, election manipulation, and clandestine governments is not political. Democrats, as well as Republicans, contribute to murdering and concealing their crimes." That's the first page of The Realist. Then we go back to page 27, and it says, "If the exposure of our CIA and its methods of operation and secret funding comes in an election year, this is a coincidence and not planned, because for 9 years I have written and telephoned public officials in the hopes that they would examine the evidence of conspiracies that exist in Washington, D.C. The Watergate affair is too large for the Democratic Party to prosecute or investigate. The best objective minds, not like the hand-picked Warren Commission, must work together, and we must follow the pieces of scotch tape that were left in the door latches of the Watergate Hotel that led to the arrests and continue to open more and more doors." And there's a quotation by Spyro Agnew under there that applies to this article. "The Greek military government that took over in 67 has not proven itself to be as horrendous a specter to contemplate as most people thought it would." That's Spyro Agnew. There's no voting, no Beatle music, no Bob Dylan. There's church on Sunday. If you criticize the government, if you criticize Agnew, you go to jail. When he went there to visit, and a newspaper publisher said that the kids were let out of school to just make the parade look like he was a popular... Oh, Phil's making a face. I'm wandering off to Agnew. Let's get on to the article. The article begins with the cast of characters, the five men who are arrested at the Watergate Hotel.
Parts of this article have already been broadcast here.
Yes, we've done this here. Now, the Watergate Hotel, for those of you who missed this show, because I'm always amazed at how many people have already lost track of what happened. It was only a month ago. The Watergate Hotel, located in Washington, D.C., is the home of John and Martha Mitchell, and it also is the headquarters of the Democratic National Committee. And in the early morning hours of June 17, 1972, five men were arrested moving ceiling parts from the ceiling of the sixth-floor panel in the Democratic National Headquarters. They possessed expensive electronic equipment, cameras, walkie-talkies, tools, accessories, and so forth. Now, the cast of characters, the way I did the article, is I listed the description of the five men who were arrested: James McCord, Bernard Barker, Frank Sturgis, Mr. Martinez, Eugenio Martinez, Virgilio Gonzalez, the four who got away. And then in the back of the article, there's a Mr. X, a mysterious Mr. X, and I just discovered him when they went to press. So Paul had to put it at the back of the article. He couldn't insert it. Mr. X is the man that Douglas Caddy, the attorney, hired, wouldn't say, give his name to the judge on why he was there. So that Mr. Caddy now has four lawyers defending him. Caddy is the attorney for the five men arrested. In addition to them, they're looking for Howard Hunt, a CIA man who was in the White House and had offices across from the White House. He was with the CIA 21 years. And Howard Hunt has not been seen since the arrest. The four men that I've listed, the four men who got away, we only have the name of one, and is then Mr. X. Then I do a brief list, a description of other names mentioned, Howard Hunt, the one I mentioned, and Robert Bennett, the office that Hunt shared, and a description of Richard Nixon and John Mitchell and Patrick Gay. Those are my cast of characters in the drama, and there's a description of their backgrounds, how it relates to the Watergate, not just what they've accomplished in their life, but what particular things relate them to the Watergate affair as a cast of characters. And then the article goes on to John Kennedy's desire to splinter the CIA to 1,000 pieces after the Bay of Pigs, and his distrust of the CIA and the quotation of Harry Truman that it was an American Gestapo. Then I go into the point that the same people that Kennedy feared and wanted to splinter and shred were all arrested at the Watergate and were in power today, 11 years later, strong, finance linked to that secret society of money that Nixon won't account for, the $10 million, that all the men that John Kennedy feared. And then after that, you know, his head was blown off by the Central Intelligence Agency and the FBI, and the same team were messing around with our election this time. The article, a lot of the article that is in here is not new to the regular listeners, and those that are picking it up today will have to get the realist for the fill-in. I go into the point that Martha Mitchell liked Washington. She liked being the wife of the head of the Justice Department. She didn't want him to resign. She doesn't complain about his long hours. She isn't loony at night like they try to tell you. She was the most desirable woman in the Republican Party. She was going to be the head of a lot of luncheons down in Miami. But she saw something at the Watergate at the time of those arrests, the week of the arrest, that she was a witness to a particular team. And therefore, she had to be locked away.
What did she see?
Well, one of the things she says that there were five men with her, and they yanked her phone off the wall and injected her.
That was in California.
She was out in California, and so was John Mitchell, and so was Patrick Gray. After the arrest, she was at a hotel at Newport Inn in California, and she says that she saw dirty work and she saw dirty things.
Where? But what,
well,
what did she
say?
What did she see in the Watergate?
Well, she didn't say whether she saw at the Watergate Hotel where she actually lives, you see. Or she didn't say if she saw that in California. She saw five men in California. And the White House, John Mitchell and Richard Nixon had a conference and said that she only had one guard. So she was left with four extra men unaccounted for. Well, when the men were arrested at the Watergate, there were nine men at the hotel. Five were arrested and four got away. So the question, we brought this up on another show, was were the four men that she saw, the four that got away, was John Mitchell, former head of the Justice Department and still an important man in the whole United States in directing the link of Rockefeller to the White House, to Richard Nixon, through this whole clandestine government. He's one of the connecting links. Did he help in any way hide four men who were sought by the federal authorities? By the police. He hired one of the men who was arrested, had a paycheck. He was employed by the committee to reelect Nixon that John Mitchell headed. So one of the men was his employee. The Monterey Herald had an article this week, I don't know if you saw it, that Bernard Barker, one of the suspects that was arrested, made 15 telephone calls from Miami to the committee to elect Richard Nixon. He was supposed to be the Democrat, but he had direct links to Mitchell's office there. See, they're linking him. The Monterey Herald had an article this week linking him. So we don't know what Martha Mitchell saw, but we have a right to find out. And one of the points I make in the article is that as a civil suit, as a friend of the court, I can sue the court to find out what she saw. You see, part of the Civil Rights Act was that you can't hide information of a witness if he has it. See, down in the South, it started in the South, all these lynchings and the bombings of the church, and everyone who got up there says, well, we don't know anything, we don't know, and the judge says, not guilty. Well, then, if the judge is hiding information, he goes to jail, you see, on the civil rights thing, to stop the process of being protected by the laws. In the article, I say, Lyndon Johnson passed the Civil Rights Act in 1964, and parts of that act were violated at the time of Martha Mitchell's abduction and in the way she was handled. Her telephone was pulled from the wall, five men silenced her, and an unknown substance was injected into her body against her will. As a friend of the court and a citizen, I have a right to charge there's been a violation of her civil rights by those in responsible positions, and it is in the national interest that she be permitted to talk freely before a responsible group. We want to know what she saw. Martha Mitchell's the wife of one of the most responsible men in the nation, and when she's treated in this manner, all of us are involved in having a right to know who is doing these things, and what happened to her could happen to any of us. Those guilty of making her a prisoner are subject to $10,000 fine and 10 years in jail, and if a conspiracy is proven, each and every person is involved and subject to the same penalties. The national interest is involved, you see. That is the problem. See, here's the point. The first half of the show, I'm talking about John Lennon. He's caught in a trap now. He's caught in the same trap that Martha Mitchell and all people. It's not a far-out hippie, person, and the wife of John Mitchell are worlds apart until the police state wants them for various reasons because they're functioning in a certain way. And say, we have a right to know what happened to Martha Mitchell. Well, if I have screamed and yelled, you want to know what happened to James Ray. See, he's in a court, locked up. No one can see him. And I've talked to black leaders, black, all over this country, all over this state, written them. I have copies of letters saying, and in this city, people in this community I've talked to, Jane Van Hook, she ran for office, public office in town. She works at Public Defender's Office here.
Legal Aid Society.
Legal Aid Society. I've talked to Pearl Carey. I've talked to people in this city. You know, they, I say, look, why don't you want to know what happened to Martin Luther King? I have a lot of friends in this community. But I said, don't you know that's going to affect your life someday? Because if they can do that to James Ray, hire him and kill Martin Luther King and not find the killers, then they're going to get you. Don't you know you're next? I plead with them to join me for their own sake, not for my sake, just for their own survival. It's in the books that they'll be wiped out. That's part of the King Alfred plan, to rip off all the leaders, go down to the next educate. And I always say that the clearing of the jungles in Brazil and the Amazons is to make ready for the supersonics, and they have the large, NASA has these large radio controls over there that can go all over the world and connect to the Texas and New Orleans area that is completely ready. The headquarters of this fascist state was going to be the Southwest. And I've said this, and I say, well, don't you want to know what happened to James Ray? Because that matters. You see, what happened to James Ray matters to John Lennon now. But there's no person famous enough or public enough who will listen to me until they're trapped. I've reached everyone that I could in my lifetime. I've been doing this work. Only when they're up against the wall, they say, well, tell me about your work. What do you know? Do you know this man? Do you know that man? Is he an agent? Is that one agent? Who's hurting us? Who's helping us? Is this one clean? Can we see this one? Who's his lawyer? See, you get trapped, and then it's too late. You see, that's the whole thing about the civil rights law, but nobody's used it. It's been here since 64, and I got this advice from an attorney here in Carmel, who read my Watergate story to make sure that I wouldn't be sued for libel, because this issue of the realists is heavy. There's a lot of heavy stuff. You know, I've got about 20 pages here of really heavy material. And if you read it, and I wanted to make sure, I know my facts. You know, I know what I'm saying is true, but I want to make sure it isn't libelous. So the Martha Mitchell thing, she's a prisoner.
So that's one article you've got in there.
Yeah, and that's the part of one article. And then I go into the Lewis Tackwood allegations in this article, that how he felt that the government was going to be overthrown, and Squad 19 that we've talked on the show, that the purpose of having provocateurs at the 1972 conventions was planned violence on the part of our state criminal conspiracy section, Evel Younger, I mention him all the time, and the FBI, he's part of the FBI, and the national organization that wanted violence, the Republican Party, and could create martial law. And then after that, they would kill Nixon. And that's in the article, too. The connection of the Squad 19 plans to my research and tying it. Now, I tried to tie it in to the Watergate Hotel. And there's a section here called How Do You Recognize a CIA Espionage Plot from a Third-Rate Burglary? Because at the time it happened, Richard Nixon called it a Third-Rate Burglary. So the first part of the article is, historically, what happened at the Bay of Pigs? Who was at the hotel from the Bay of Pigs? What happened to the CIA? Who was at the arrest from the CIA? What did Tackwood say, how the country was going to be overthrown? How did these people link? So then I have a section, how do you recognize a CIA espionage plot? And I go into 13 ways you recognize it. I could have gone longer, but we wanted to get this press before the Republican convention and get out this week, and the issues will be out in New York this week. So I stopped at number 13, but I could go on to other categories. I had to have a cutoff date. That was part of the trouble of writing when you're writing something this important and serious, and you've got a cutoff date because we were a week late. But the information that was coming in delayed me because I had certain articles coming in that week. And I would take one article from the Washington Post or the New York Times, because a lot of people wonder, where do you get your sources of information? The Monterey Herald had one article this week. Maybe I break it into 11 categories, that one article. Well, then you've got to rewrite your thing because you've got your categories.
So what back I to this one.
Back to this one. How do you recognize a CIA plot like the Watergate Hotel from a Third-Rate Burglary? I listed 13 ways you can. One is the use of the cover story. Everything has a cover story, which has no basis in fact later, but is used to make you sit back and accept it. Therefore, believe everything's well and safe in the land. Deniability always follows a CIA conspiracy. As soon as a person is caught, if they're caught, everyone cuts off relationships and nobody knows anybody else. They don't say, oh, sure, that's my brother-in-law. Yeah, that's my organization. They say, no, I never heard of them. And so deniability is very heavy because everybody cuts off with everyone else because they've got other jobs to do after that, you see. So they don't want to blow this. And then there's dummy front organizations that don't exist. They use names and organizations of businesses and employments that are no such place, like the organization that Lee Harvey Oswald worked at for Fair Play for Cuba. If you walked up the stairs on one street, if you walked in a building back to back on the other street, went upstairs, it was the same office for the CIA. You know, one is a CIA office with Guy Bannister and David Ferry and the whole gang, and the other front office on Canal Street is Fair Play for Cuba. And it's back-to-back, the same doors connect, you know? Just like your KLRB, you have a back door and a front door, and the middle door is where they meet, see? Okay, so they've got funding, the source of funding of a CIA operation is never direct, you see. And then there's the communications and radio control, because always radio comes in. There's a getaway car with a radio band in the Tippett thing. There's radio bands in the Martin Luther King thing, the radio in the tied up to the police bands in Arthur Brammer's car. Always radio communications. They have to have it because they have to know what to do in event, or is this covered? They can't get caught. It's not just a guy standing there shooting who doesn't have a band or a radio department. Arthur Brammer doesn't have it. See, there's radio. Then there's the aliases. They never use their names. They use Heidel, like Oswald used Heidel, and James Ray had, when he left the penitentiary, and I have in the article, he had a security card and a name of Raines ready for him that you don't print in the penitentiaries, you know, ready for a job. There's always your aliases. Then there's your job changes, because you lead a certain life and you're a student, or you work at a cars place, or you're in the police force. Then they say, well, you get into this particular, this is going to be a conspiracy on a need-to-know basis, but they don't want you to be traced. So you lose all chain of command for 2 years. So everyone involved always changes jobs and locations, and in the event he's caught, he's not linked to his former employer job. See? So I made a term up called migratory birds for my research, where people change. And then there's your housing. Double housing, because you lose your other home. Like, you lose your name and you lose your job, well, you can't stay home and be, you know, if you're Phil Cogan and you're going to do an assignment to you, so now you got to be something else. You can't be home with the same wife and the same name. You got to go somewhere else. So you got to have another house. And then wherever that house is, if you're losing yourself and you're working for the post office, the post office guys come to see you, you have to have another location where you do your espionage work, because you can't have the espionage people and the straight people meeting. You're leading a straight life, but you're involved in a conspiracy, so you have to have double housing. And this works in every one of the cases. This is why I could recognize the Watergate, because I'd broken it down in the Oswald, in the Manson thing, in the Sirhan, the James Ray, the killing of Robert Kennedy, Martin Luther King, and the Chappaquiddick, the dunking of Ted Kennedy, and the all of these conspiracy things have double, people have double roles. Then there's the local police, the military, the Treasury, the Justice, and the FBI. You can't do it without their help. Certain members, not all of them, but special tax squads, criminal conspiracy sections, there are certain people that know how to pick up. Like if the local policeman arrests Arthur Brammer, he only has him just a few hours. He couldn't even go to the hospital to get treatment. They called the White House for permission. I have an article. Richard Nixon gave permission for Arthur Brammer to go to the hospital and get stitches on his head or hurt because he was hurt by the crowd if the FBI is there. And when he walks out of the hospital, he's under the custody of the Federal Bureau of Investigation from then on. The local police, if they're straight, don't ever get the case. The local policeman, the homicide, wanted to do the autopsy of John Kennedy. And they come in, they say, you can't take his body. It's a plain homicide. They say, yeah, we're taking it. Johnson says it goes to Bethesda, and off goes John Kennedy's body. And the local police don't get that body. So some policemen are in and some aren't. So don't get nervous, local policemen. You're not all part of a conspiracy. And I don't think police are pigs, and I'm not anti-police. And if my house is robbed, I call the police. I'm not calling a hippie like they say, you know, that car bumper. If your house is robbed, call a hippie. I believe in the police, but there are special men, like a certain man in the Carmel Police Department that's come up from the L.A. Police Department, from a special department. And one of my friend's son was busted, and a phony rap was put on him. And the judge threw it out, but he was harassed. He could have had a felony. The kid couldn't have been able to vote in this next election. He went to court here. He was supposed to go to New York to his father this summer. He was held up. They had to get the expense of lawyers. They have to prove their innocence. And the man who got him is a local policeman who came from L.A. who should be watched. The local boys are okay, but it's those importations, migratory birds again, that bring your community trouble. They lose their locations, they come to new communities, and they're special tax squads, and those are the people who are going to get stuff. Okay, so you've got your cities and your countries. Certain cities and countries are involved in every conspiracy. And then there's what we call coincidences that are never coincidences, but they call them coincidences, and some are funny, and some aren't. And then there's witnesses that are never called and questions never asked. Now, the importance of the Watergate story is that through the news media, and I hope, and there's going to be a lot of press coverage and maybe a press conference in L.A. There's talk about setting one up. Paula didn't know if he wanted it. Don Fried, the publisher and co-writer of the Squad 19 with Lewis Tackwood, wants it. So we may have it. We'll be in touch with all the news media in the next 2 weeks because I want all the questions answered. See, this thing went to press with only a few questions in it, but it is a can of worms when it opens up. It's going to be a big story and a good story, Phil, because there's a lot of questions here. And I tied in 9 years of research to the Watergate Hotel, and hopefully people will begin to see how. See, nobody's ever written a book on how these things apply to our present problem. What I have here, witnesses not called, I've broken down 13 categories, and I could have gone for 27. On how every conspiracy case applies to these kind of operations. We'll say the espionage system, you read the invisible government, and he may talk about deniability, or the Pentagon Papers talks about the deniability of Conine. But I'm taking a particular arrest in Washington and tying it into the plan to overthrow the government, which I said would happen. And how these men maybe, see what I'm hoping is that it could be stopped if you expose it before. You see why it's a big story? We're hoping that we can stop it by exposing it. And because there's two things in our favor, there's always been a news blackout on assassinations and on what happens in this country. But we've got two things in our favor now. And there's books out about assassinations and people, you know, are confused about the CIA. But what's in our favor is that you have Martha Mitchell, who's a woman, and women and women's organizations and women's libs are worrying because she is an actual prisoner. She is an actual prisoner. She's been injected. She's been put to sleep. She's been flown to New York. She's isolated. She's not with her child now. She's an actual prisoner. And you have a case pending. And Richard Nixon asked, please don't have the lawsuit now because it'll hurt the Democratic Party. Richard Nixon asked that, and I have that in the article. I wanted the article.
You heard the Democratic Party or the Republican?
He asked the Democratic Party not to sue the Republican Party on the arrest till after the elections because it would hurt his elections. This is what he said. The Committee for the Re-election of the President is worried that a hearing on a suit involved in the break-in and bugging attempt would cause incalculable damage to President Nixon's campaign. The committee asked the U.S. District Court to postpone suit against them until after November the 7th election because it said it could deter the campaign workers and contributions and force disclosure of confidential information and provide the Democrats with a reason to hold a news conference. He was afraid that he said it would cause incalculable damage to President Nixon.
Now, maybe it should be heard.
What I want to say, there's one other thing I want to say. People called in last week, Phil, while you were away, and wanted to know about McGovern and voting about McGovern and what I thought about his chances, you know, and my opinion about him. And I like what he said. I like his acceptance speech. I went to a Democratic Party this week. My neighbor, Mrs. Campisi, across the street, has been an active Democrat, and she has invited me in the Democratic Party for years. I was a registered Democrat when John Kennedy was in office. I heard his acceptance speech at the L.A. Coliseum in 1960, took the kids with a picnic bottles lunch, just like I took them to see the Beatles. I want them to be a part of their history and their times if I can, you know, as a mother. And I did these things. Well, After Kennedy was killed and I was doing my work by 64, I knew Lyndon Johnson was in on this thing and I wasn't going to support him and I wouldn't do that campaign. And 66, I was up here and the Democratic Party knew, looked up, registered Democrat, would you help us? I don't support assassins, Democrats or Republicans. I will not touch your party until you find out who killed John Kennedy. Oh, you don't say these things. You know, you don't say that. That's terrible. Don't talk this way. The years went on. They worked for... Mrs. Green came down here to manage the campaign. She worked for Bobby, worked for Stevenson. She worked for John Kennedy. She worked for Bobby Kennedy. So she was out at this lunch at the Democratic Party. She'd been to Miami. She was going to tell about experience. So I thought, is the McGovern team any different than the people that surround John Kennedy and Bobby that let them be killed? Larry O'Brien, or Schlesinger, Salinger, those cop-out, they keep the same job when the boy is killed. They still keep the same jobs, the same money. They're still written up in Life and Newsweek. How do they care? What do they care? So I said to Mary Green, I walked up to her afterwards, and I said, did they talk about the Watergate Hotel in Miami at the time of the convention? The Miami convention was July the 3rd to 10th. The Watergate arrest was June the 19th. So by that time, I was so heavy into my work, realizing what happened there. Didn't anyone down there understand who was in their place? She looked at me like, drop dead, chick, and turned her back to me and talked to someone else and said, no. Like, don't you dare talk about what happened. Well, here, let me put something really clear on the radio station. The President of the United States, Richard Nixon, is saying, please don't open up that case. It will hurt my cause. It will do incalculable damage to the president's campaign. And the Democrats are too stupid to even talk to you about that subject. That's the one thing they have going for them, and they're too stupid to even talk. They don't even know who would kill McGovern. They don't care. They may not like me saying that they don't care, but Schlesinger comes through town. He's Mr. CIA. And so if I tell you young people, go vote for McGovern, go vote for a corpse. That's what they would let him be. They don't care. And Mary Green on the peninsula, who wants you to, all you young McGovern people, to go out, go ask her why she won't talk about the Watergate. I just said to her, I didn't say anything except, I said, did anyone talk about the Watergate? She didn't turn to me and just smile and say, isn't that far out that they were arrested? As a person to a person, you know, a human being, communication, laughing like we caught them, didn't we? If we're on the same side, then we should at least know that we have something going for us. But unless she's an enemy of mine, and I don't know what she is. I don't know what she is, but the fact that she doesn't want you on the peninsula or me or to communicate to me about the Watergate means that you McGovern people, with a halo on your head and starry-eyed, you're going to change America. You're going to get up like John Lennon, trapped in a cage. That's the prognosis. Don't put the McGovern sticker on your car and think you're going to save America, because if the McGovern people don't care about the overthrow of America, they don't care about you. It's just that simple.
Mae Russell.
This has been Dialogue Conspiracy, a public affairs presentation of KLRB News. If you have questions that you want answered on future programs or any comments, write Dialogue Conspiracy, KLRB, Box 3904, Carmel, California, 93921. I'm Phil Kogan.
This is KLRB FM in Carmel.